Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
TGIF, it's Friday. And thank heaven. This is Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio and Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston, South Carolina, my sophisticated co-host, cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mikey. Thank God it's Friday.
Good afternoon, Annie. As always, a pleasure and an honor to be your co-host and sidekick on this January 24th cold winter day up in Michigan, but great to have here to all our listeners on BTR and Kinetic Hi-Fi. And today, once again, the return of Leon Wynn for Congress. I got all kinds of questions for him.
Ah, good for you, because this week has been so hectic. Absolutely crazy. No sooner do I get back from the Tea Party convention, and then I end up on Andrea Shea King's show, and she's a fantastic lady. And then I end up doing my show, and everything has hit the fan this week. We've got to our Tea Party, monthly Tea Party meeting on Monday, we've got a TV station from Sweden, TV4, flying in to do a documentary about the conservative movement and Tea Party movement here in the United States. And they want to get out of the D.C. hub, so they'll be flying in on Monday afternoon. They'll be with us Monday evening. But I forgot, and they've so nicely reminded me my own politics going on. On Tuesday, we have the presidential State of the Union. Remember last time, Joe? You lie, Wilson. Well, Tuesday night they're staying over to film us watching it. But 2 hours before, I'm going to have some of the candidates running here in South Carolina come before our Tea Party group, 2 hours before, do a meet and greet, do a question and answer period, then go to watch the State of the Union and Senator Lee's rebuttal. And I have been working my butt off, and I am exhausted.
Well, I'm excited to, wow, that's really, really cool. So I guess I'm excited to watch TV4 in Sweden. And
well, I'm sure they'll tell us when the documentary comes out or whether or not they air some of the stuff on the news. But they say that over there in Sweden especially, they're hungry to hear about this movement. Now, don't forget, Iceland recently had that silent revolution where they overturned the entire government and took it back. So there are other countries across the globe that are looking at what we do here and what succeeds and what works and how we can force our government to step back and down. So, guys, anyone that thinks the Tea Party movement is dead had better wake up and smell that coffee and stop drinking that Kool-Aid.
Well, apparently, I wonder if they may have to do a few beeps when it comes to you watching the State of the Union. but that's great. That's terrific. And as we have free spots in the show today, you can tell us about your weekend and just how everything went, and you know, the experience.
Well, that we'll discuss with Leon because he was up there with us, and you know, I had a little bit of a beef about something, but not his fault. It was something that we were trying to do for him, and unfortunately, it didn't work. But you know, we'll talk about that as we get on with this. I want to welcome everyone that's in the chat room and our friend Sue, one of our most faithful listeners. God bless you, Sue. I'm glad you're listening in. Anyone that listens to the show knows that we start off with a dedication to a fallen hero. And this time I chose a Marine Corps Corporal, Thomas Jefferson, who died in World War II during the invasion of Guam. And this is from, let me see if I can get this straight. Just bear with me. I've got notes all over the place. This is from the Fresno Bee, and it starts off in Chowchilla, California. 75-year-old military veteran Kevin Jack Johnson fought back the tears Monday, standing over his father's grave as his colleagues handed him a folding flag. He was only 4 or 5 years old when his father, Corporal Thomas Jefferson Johnson, TJ to his family, joined the U.S. Marines during World War II and was killed in action in the 1944 invasion of Guam. As a member of the American Veterans Post 56 in Tulare, Johnson traveled to more than 100 military funerals a year in Tulare and Kings counties. But while he honored the lives of other fallen veterans, Johnson held a secret regret inside his heart. His father never received full military honors. 2 years after the war, TJ's remains were returned to the United States for a quiet burial in Chowchilla. No bugle playing, taps, no color guard, no gun salute, or the presentation of the flag. It's something that bothered me. He never had the funeral he deserved, Johnson said. I said to myself, it's a shame. My father never received that. I asked these guys if we could do it, and every one of them said yes. A team of guard members gathered at the Chowchilla Cemetery Monday morning to give Johnson's father the proper military honors in a ceremony that brought the Tulare resident to tears. It's the greatest day of my life to be able to come down and do this for my dad, Johnson said. I just think it's the way past due. Tom Donween, 74, an honor guard member and former post commander, said he gets satisfaction taking part in burial ceremonies, and Monday's was particularly emotional because of his relationship with Kevin Johnson. I know Kevin, and he's been passionate about this, Donwin said. He tells us about his dad and kept mentioning he never received military honors. These are our guys. It's an unspoken brotherhood, he added. If we know the family, it's a little more personal for me. Every one of them deserves it. Alex Haley, 83, Color Guard commander, said it's never too late to give a service member the proper burial, even if it's more than 70 years later, like Johnson's father. For our fallen brothers, we feel it's necessary to have a proper funeral to send them to their next command, Haley said. Thousands of them have not had the chance to have a proper send-off from this life to the next. It makes us more convinced to give our time to make sure the services go right for our fallen brothers and sisters. Coincidentally, a local historian named Randy Weaver acquired a funeral book belonging to Kevin Johnson's father 5 years ago after TJ's sister moved out of her home. He came to the cemetery to give the book to Kevin Johnson. Weaver also said he has the Bible TJ was carrying and Western Union announcement about TJ's death. He plans to give them to Kevin also. To these brave men and women, we dedicate the show. We'll also dedicate to them this song, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Herndon. It's never too late to say thank you. God bless them all.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud. I stand for my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand.
My name is America, and you can download that for free at Todd Allen's site. Go to toddallenherndon.com and get it. And I understand he's got a new album out, and I keep on forgetting to follow up and call on him. Mike, you've got to get on me about that. Jeez, I'm getting forgetful in my old age.
I'll do the best I can. So before Mr. Leon, quickly, okay, we hung up last weekend, and what has? Tell us about the weekend, the Tea Party weekend.
Oh man, it was electrifying. This is the fourth one that I've gone to, and I've seen, the way people react to certain things, and energy goes up, energy goes down, it varies, but this had everyone fired up. Everyone was really positive about this last convention, and I think it's because we had positive messages going out, and people are willing to take the fight to the street. And I do believe we have our guest here now. Let me just bring his microphone on. And Dr. Nguyen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you all doing?
All right. A little discombobulated because this week kind of like panned out where I was running like a chicken with my head cut off.
But
and it's not going to be done until after Tuesday, as you know. You're going to be with
us
on Tuesday. Yeah, it's going to be fun because I enjoyed seeing you and your wife again up there, and you've got a great staff working with you. And we're,
thank you.
I'm
same here.
Doing everything possible to get your name out there in front. I was up in Walterboro yesterday because that's where our eye doctor is with the insurance covers. Mm-hmm. I have to go all the way up to Walterboro. Like there's anything in Walterboro. Anyway, I was talking to the girls in the shop there, and I said, well, do you know who your congressman is? No one knew. No one knew
group?
Who the congressman is.
What were the age group?
Well, one of them was, I would say, in her late 30s, 40s. The other young lady was a little bit younger. The girl I was speaking to, her father is the acting police chief up there. So she's no spring chicken.
Really?
But she didn't. I mean, here you are. You're in law enforcement. You should know who your legislatures are because they're the ones enacting the laws that you've got to enforce. And if her husband is going out in the street and laying his butt on the line, and I'm a retired cop too, I want to know who's doing these laws and whether or not the law they're passing is something that I feel would not violate my vow to the Constitution and my vow to the city, state, or whatever you're serving.
Hence, that's one of the things that I've shared with people as I meet near and far, is that most of that generation, the reason I age that generation is basically, I use the terminology disenfranchised, which in most simplistic term is they don't know who these people are. They don't know who the congressmen are. And because they are not out there doing anything that make any impact on their lives.
Well, it's funny you say there's no impact in their lives, but when you have gun control, when you have control of speech, control of religion, and now control of your very health, don't you think people would wake up and start to smell the coffee? I think that's my favorite phrase today.
We should. But once again, people look at stuff in the individual life. Now, we running for politics and what you're doing on the radio show, trying to get information out there abroad, the average individual is concerned about what their personal life is. And you can't hold that against them. And when I say that they don't impact their lives, is because they don't know who they are. They're not out there. They're not implementing programs to say, well, my congressman did this. Or everything that we hear is not adding or helping. It's taken away or destroying.
Well, it's funny because, someone was complaining and then saying, I don't like what's going on here. I don't like what's going on there. And my response to them was, and I think I told you this, well, what are you doing? Well, I'm coming to the convention with you. Yes, but what are you doing? Well, I'm sitting here, I'm listening. No, you don't understand. What are you doing? What are you willing to do to change the tide? And there's no answer. And I think people are just too timid to take that step forward.
We have to get at the terminology that people are using now. You got to think outside the box. I don't say think outside the box. You got to get outside the box. You got to get out in the community. You got to get in the political arena, and you got to make your presence known. You can't just be there. A lot of people were at the convention this weekend, but how many people made their presence known? That's what make a difference. When you're doing something, your presence ought to be felt. Your presence ought to be known. Your voice ought to be heard. And that's what people have to learn to do.
Exactly. I really enjoyed it because you saw me. I was all over the place. I was walking around. I was talking to people, getting their opinions, expressing mine. And, someone turned around and says, well, are you going to make any difference? And I said, well, if I go out there and I convince one person, on an issue I'm very passionate about, if I can convince one person and they see and feel that passion, they're going to go and tell a friend or family member, and they're going to spread that passion. And so that my speaking to one person now spreads into hundreds and thousands. And
what? Go ahead.
I was going to say, it takes just one person to start that snowball going down the side of the mountain to build that avalanche.
It's tantamount to the concept, and me being straight from the country and just have a whole country appeal, is that it's like walking up to a big oak tree, and you look at the tree and you say, I can't move that tree. It's nothing I can do. I just nothing I can do. But the tree needs to come down. How does that tree come down? One chop at a time. And if you keep on chopping, you keep on plucking, you keep on hitting, eventually, it may take a while, and you're going to feel the pain, you're going to feel the agony, but you got to keep on chopping if you want it down. And that's what we have to do. We have to keep on chopping, talk to people, network, get others to network, and call people. Just do something. Just don't sit up and just wait on things to change. You have to help eradicate that change.
Exactly, exactly. So that's why whenever I go outside of the district that I'm in, because I've got Mark Sanford, but, you know, there's a border just a matter of, you know, half a mile away where your district then falls into place. But whenever I travel outside my district, I ask, are you aware who's running, you know, against James Clyburn? And when they say, oh, I don't even know who my congressman is, that's when you see me roll into action. So I'm hoping, I mean, I was over at Harold's Country Club. On the way back, of course, the car always turns into Harold's. I'm coming down 17.
It finds its own way there, right?
It does. It's like autopilot. And, you know, and I start talking to the people there. And again, they didn't know who their congressman was. And I said, well, you know, it's James Clyburn. You're in Clyburn's district. Are you aware there's a conservative Republican running against him? And to a person, they said, no. And I
said, That is our overall challenge, is that we have to get our face out there, get our name out there, and let people know there is a candidate. There's someone that actually can defeat Clyburn. And that's what we're working hard to do through the media. We're going to have to use a lot of grassroots efforts. We're going to have to use poster. We're going to have to even eventually do commercials, because people need to know. And if they don't know, how can we expect them to do anything? They just follow the same rut they've always followed.
Well, you know what? We just got ourselves up on Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston, which is also another area that you're going to be covering. So I'm going to have to talk to you about taking out an ad on this show then. And it's very inexpensive, and your campaign manager, James, is going to love me. So I'll talk to him later on after the show. Now, we got a question popping up in the chat room already. But before we go into those questions, I want you to introduce yourself to the listeners. You're running for South Carolina District 6 to the U.S. Congress.
Yes, my name is Leon Wynn. I'm from Southeast Georgia originally. I've been in South Carolina going on almost 40 years. I've been self-employed the majority of my life. I've owned my own businesses. I've been in law enforcement. I've been in the military, United States Air Force. I've been always active. I've pastored a church. I've been pastoring over 33 years. I've been at the church I'm now at 17 years in Manning, South Carolina. I've always been active. I've never been docile. I've always done things constructive and positive. That's who I am. I'm a father of three daughters, three grandchildren, and a married. I keep forgetting that. That's why I have to write it down.
But, you know, you're also unusual because you're a conservative.
Yes, and I'm a Republican. I'm a black Republican, and that's not the norm in this area. But we're going to change that.
Yes. You know, it always frustrated me because when we were going to the 2008 and 2010 and 12 elections, you know, I was talking to someone who happened to have been a good Baptist, and I said, you know, I don't understand why more people that are people of the faith and people of the church, why aren't they more as conservatives? Because you don't want government inside your church. You don't want government inside your life. You want to be able to be responsible for your own actions. You want to be able to take care of yourself and your community through your church and through your own doings. So why do you go to someone that makes you dependent upon government, that has government intruding in your life? Why aren't you a Republican or a conservative? And no one ever had an answer.
And I can give that answer because I'm a product of that. We're a product of our environment. We were brought up in a culture where blacks are Democrats and whites are Republican. That's how I came up. That's all I knew. Regardless to what the Republican Party was doing or regardless of what the Democratic Party was doing, we stuck with the black side of politics because that's what we were taught. I didn't know any different, and I think that I'm a reasonably intelligent person. I didn't know any different until the last 5 years ago because no one talked about it. We were caught up in the dogma of our foundation, where we came from, the areas in which we live in. And this is what have transpired. And what we're doing now is getting the message out that there is nothing further from the truth. It is Republican Party that liberated the black community. It is Republican Party that was fighting for freedom. Abraham Lincoln was a Republican. Martin Luther King, Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, Mary Cloud Bethune, Don G. Woodson, who wrote the National Black Anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing. All these people, all the pioneers that brought about change for the black community were Republican, and it was based on their Christian belief. Every Christian that believes in God is really a Republican.
Well, I don't remember the name of the state senator here in South Carolina, but he had a doctrine, because he was Ku Klux Klan, and he had a doctrine, a Democratic senator, but he felt that he had to change the black vote from the Republican Party into the Democratic Party, and he did that by intimidation. He had a group called the Red Shirts, and they would go out and lynch and burn and actually cowed a whole segment of our society and forced them into the Democratic Party. And I think once that happened, it was like, well, we don't want any trouble. We don't want to see ourselves lynched. So the easiest way out is to say I'm a Democrat and vote Democrat.
Exactly. And if you do some background research to build on what you're saying, and we're synonymous in our thought, is that back in the late 50s, early 60s, you could not find a Republican in South Carolina. I heard a gentleman said you couldn't find them with a hong dog because they were ran out of the area. And everybody that taught that principle were lynched or killed, literally.
Exactly. And the same thing held true for Georgia. Because I have a friend of mine, Judge Murray Silver, and he was there with the Reverend Abernathy and Dr. Martin Luther King Sr. and Jr. throughout the whole civil rights. He was a civil rights attorney out of Atlanta. You probably from that area know him. He now lives out in Hillhead here. Yeah. He wrote the book, Daddy King and Me. And when I was talking to him, and I said, you know, why were you a Democrat when you stood for all these principles? He goes, honey, you couldn't do anything in the state of Georgia. You couldn't go into business. No one would listen to you or pay attention to you unless you were a registered Democrat. There was just no other way to do business.
And they had to deal with what they had to deal with. They had no choice in the matter. So you either do it to survive or you just get pushed aside. So we can't necessarily hold against them, because I was in a meeting last night and I was talking about when integration a little bit, and I shared with the people that was over 55 and over 60, I said it was just a different time in a different era,
time of change. Now, we've got to do – I'm going to put the teeth in backwards. You can see I've been rushed around all week. We have a question here in the chat room, so I don't want to leave this poor person hanging too long. Sammy, she's asking what your view is on Affordable Care Act and birth control. We're saying that you will get elected. So now here you are, Congressman Wynn. What are you going to do about them?
Once again, and I share this, you can't legislate morality when it comes to birth control. Affordable Care Act, and I think we're on the same point. We're talking about Obamacare, am I correct?
Correct.
All right. You can't make people buy insurance, and there's going to be a penalty from what I understand, that if you don't purchase it by X amount of days, you're going to be penalized. I will fight the Affordable Care Act, because what has happened, we cannot allow the government to take over the insurances of the nation. That's taking away free enterprise. When the government take over, then it will pull all other companies out of business, first and foremost. Then there's no competition. There's no rate change. There's nothing that would cause people to get better health care. It is not going to produce better health care, because you just got the government. Government should not be in the insurance business at all. Government should is not government was not designed for that.
No, not at all. And now a major group, Aetna, is saying they're going to pull out of Obamacare. Yeah, how many millions of people across the United States have insurance through Aetna? And they will lose it.
A couple of months ago when the government shutdown was, I was talking to this young lady, and we were just talking in general, and she worked for Shaw Air Force Base, and she said, I'm out of work. We're not being paid. We have been out of work a week, or 2 weeks at a time. And she said, if we're not being paid, who is paying our insurance? And she woke me up in the concept of that they can lose their health benefit because of what the government is doing. The government is intruding too much in personal liberties, and it has to be stopped. We have to stop it.
Okay. Now, we also had another question from someone else in the chat room. He goes by GOP Gopher Fan. He's asking if you have any big money backing you. And as far as I know, you've got no big backers.
None at all. And one of the things that I believe in is this. The Bible teaches the love of money is the root of all evil. You don't have to steal it, rob it, or cheat people out of the love it. I'm not going to be bought, and I guarantee you that unequivocally. The people that elected, that will elect me, will the people that I will stand for. Not for any personal gain, but standing for the people. Far too many times, and I've helped people that ran for political office. And you know what I'm talking, and people say, well, you're saying the same thing that the other person say. I'm going to make a difference. The same people we put in office somehow, some way between here and the office, they forget who put them there. They don't realize it's the people that put you there. It's the people. One of the things that I love about one of our deceased senators, Strom Thurmond. Strom Thurmond was great because he loved his people. What made Strom Thurmond the mighty force he was? He loved the people of South Carolina. He did everything to protect the people of South Carolina. And I admire that. I always did. And I would work very hard to do basically the same thing, or to do the same thing. Take care of your people.
Well, one of my pet peeves is, which I've had with some of our representatives here and senators, is that whenever they say they're bringing jobs to South Carolina, they never look to the poorest area that has the most manpower and probably the most intellectual resources because so many people are looking for work. We've got northern Beaufort County here, north of the Broad and south of Charleston, where we used to have seven large manufacturers, one including a jean company. We're down to one. And this is just in the 12 years that I've lived, no, the first 12 years I've lived here. And nothing new has come to the area. You get it south of the Broad, going into Bluffton, Hilton Head, Jasper County now. You have it going up into Columbia and the areas outlying Columbia. You've got it going up into Charleston, especially North Charleston. But nothing is coming here to the very heart of the 6th District.
One of the things we will do is work towards getting more industries into the heart of the 6th District. But one of the things we have to do, and as you talk about the population of the poorest people in the 6th District, that's the background which I came from, we have to work with the technical schools and high schools, as far as the high school, bringing technical skills back into the schools. I've shared this on numerous occasions, go as far back as middle school, when you go into the sixth grade. Start finding technical trades and skills that young people are more inclined to just love doing. It matters little who an individual is. If they do something that they love, they will be good at it. And once he or she finds that area in which they love doing, they will be good at it. Now, once they graduate high school, they can go into these technical plants or go into the second level of education and learning more technical skills. We have to get the labor force educated when these industries and stuff come to the state. We got to get them educated. So it goes right back down to education, education, and education. You educate a person, you liberate their lifestyle, you liberate the way they think. You change the whole community when you bring education into an area. We have to build a foundation on education for our young people, our young men who are losing sense of hope, who don't think they can get a job. I'm thinking about myself. I looked at my family when I was in Southeast Georgia. Nobody was doing nothing. Nobody was working. The cycle was repeating itself. And I was determined to get out of that cycle. by the grace of God, the Air Force gave me my ticket out.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to do.
It's funny because when I was a cop on the street, I'd see these kids hanging out. And it's like, well, I'm forever going to be poor. I'm forever going to be on welfare and everything else. And at that point, my first husband being a Marine, and I was around a lot of recruiters, I would start talking to them and saying, you know, well, here's an out, whether or not it's the Marine Corps, the Navy, or the Army, you know, they're going to give you a college education if you join up. They will pay for it for you because if you can't afford it, they need you to have skills. They want you to have skills, and they're willing to help you with them. And, you know, a lot of these kids, I was able to get out of there, out of that life. And, you know, years later, one of them came back and he said, you know, officer, thank you. You know, I'm now getting married. I'm now starting a family. And I'm living a life far better than my parents gave me. And, again, this is the message we have to get out. Well, you can pull yourself up, but you've got to be willing to take that first step to try.
One writer said, I must have read this 20 years ago, maybe 30 years ago. This writer wrote, only in America, it matters little your ethnicity, it matters little your social background, it matters little how poor you are. If you educate yourself, you can pull yourself out of poverty. Everybody does not have to have a bachelor's degree. Everybody don't have to go to school for 4 years, but you got to have some kind of training. You have to have something that you could bring to the table when you are out here applying for a job. Even if you, sometime if you just got the self-determined self-will, somebody can see something in you that no one else can see. But you got to want it. You got to want to pull yourself out. Regardless of how much we want to pull people out, if you don't want to do it, there's nothing anybody can do for you. The military has been the road to so many success stories for people born in low-income areas or homes. The military has been a way. The military was my way out because a majority of my friends when I was a young boy became alcoholics, and I was determined not to be one. And I took that way out. And I had a young lady when I went back home visiting one time. She said to me, you took the easy way out. What do you mean I took the easy way out? I took a way out. It wasn't easy. I had to get trained. I had to go to basic training. And it's appalling that people just don't want to step up and do something for themselves and find excuses not to do. And we got to instill back in the young minds and spirit of people, you got to want things for yourself and get people out of the rut of socializing with people that don't want to do nothing. And it becomes a whole different dynamics in certain areas. Nobody's doing nothing, and everybody's happy. How can you be happy and y'all not doing nothing? And we can stop it. We can stop it.
Yeah, this is one thing that we have to teach people. You know, it's easy to put your hand out and say, give me, give me, give me. But
yes.
Where is it? Where's the personal satisfaction? What is your achievement? What are you proud of? You have no pride, so all you do then is do more drugs, do more drinking, just hang out some more, and you're just spreading your misery around, and you're just wallowing in a self-made pool of misery. But if we can catch these kids when they're young enough and teach them pride in self, and that's something our school system cannot do. That's what we have to have our parents doing. And, you know, I had when I was up in Walterboro, I was watching, you know, the couples that were sitting there. This one father came in with his son, and there was an older couple there, and, you know, he looked like he may have been a minister himself. You know, he and his wife were black, and they're talking between the two of them, and they're talking about exercising and doing healthy things. I'm thinking, yay, people are thinking about being self-responsible. And he sees his father and the young son come in, and the care the father was giving the son was just so refreshing. And the gentleman turned around and he said, you know, I am glad that you are the man in his life. He goes, more and more families have to have the father involved. They've got to wake up. And then what he said next was, he said, the crap that they have fed us all these years, we know doesn't work. We've seen the results, and I'm glad that you did too. And I'm saying the cycle is being broken. Amen.
Yes, and we can do it. We can do it. And I've shared that with my entire family, doing family reunion. You may not have liked the way I tell you this. You may not understand the way I'm saying this to you, but you can do better if you want to. We have to break this cycle. I started with my family. There's an old concept that says charity starts at home. We ought to start cleaning our own house, start with our own family, our own children, and make them understand that you, entitlement, free doesn't come free. My grandmother used to say to me when I was young, the only thing in life come free is trouble, and you pay for that eventually. So nothing is life that in life to come free. It comes with a call, cost. I've heard people in the church say salvation is free, and we sing that song. We sing those hymns, salvation is free. No, it is not. Salvation comes with a commitment to God. You have to give God his glory. So no matter how you look at it, you're going to have to give something, and you're going to have to work for it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was catching a little bit of the preview of this State of the Union address for Obama for Tuesday, and this was in the Examiner.com, and they're predicting that he's going to focus on the same platform again. He's going to focus on economic equality and mobility. That's the new catchphrase that he's been tossing around. And he did this in a December 4th speech. He's also saying that the defining challenge of our time, a fundamental threat to the American dream. And I'm reading this and I'm going, oh, no. He has no idea what the true American dream is. It's not economic equality. It's equality in the chance to seek economic mobility and social mobility. It's the chance. There's nothing guaranteed, but we're going to offer you.
It's the pursuit of happiness.
Exactly. And again, he's going to be trying to drive that wedge into our fight against what the true poverty is, and that's the poverty of spirit. That's the poverty of will.
When you take a person, when you darken a person light, and you take hope out of the equation, then you can keep people oppressed. I was in a meeting last night, and I shared with some of the people, because I utilized this when I was speaking at the NAACP for their Emancipation Proclamation Day, the day of Jubilee on the New Year's Day, when our former President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. And I asked them, I said, and to all everybody listening to me, in the King James Version, only the King James Version, how many times the word slave is mentioned in the King James Version? And a lot, some people said a lot. But the word slave was only mentioned one time in the King James Version. The word slaves, plural, was mentioned one. Revelation and the word slave in Jeremiah, it was bondage. People were in bondage. And we are now in bondage. We are not slave, but we're in economical, social bondage from the regime of the government and how they are taking, giving us entitlement. They're giving you something, but they're taking your dignity away. So we have found another state of bondage that we got to get out.
That is true. Now, I know my co-host has been sitting there very quietly, and before we came on air, he said he's got a lot of questions for you. So cool, Mike.
Yeah, well, oh, Mr. Leon, welcome back. Great to have you here.
Hey, how you doing? Good to be back.
Good, Mr. Wynn. Well, first question. All right. You running for office, standard politician, you hear this, you hear that. Energy is my first question. And, I mean, okay, all the candidates, they address energy, energy efficiency, et cetera, et cetera. As a member of Congress representing the 6th, it is a 6th district, correct?
Right.
What would you do in regards to energy, whether it's alternative or whatever, to help America become energy independent?
We need to tap into our own resources. We have enough oil in America to last this country over 500 years if we just stay where we are, according to some of the readings that I've had. We can develop windmill near the coast, because when you come into inner area of South Carolina, you don't have a lot of wind. But you can start actually with windmill near the coast coming off the ocean. We can become self-sufficient, but we got to be willing to spend the money to do it. And being self-sufficient, we need to stop depending on foreign oil. I read this many years ago, is that when you depend on your enemy, at any time your enemy can take your dependence away, and that's what we're doing.
Okay. Now, another thing, too, is how about you talked about the coast, and obviously South Carolina has some very big ports. How about trade, whether it's within the United States, international trade, et cetera, et cetera?
We have to open up the trade ports because the Panama, if I'm not mistaken, the Panama Canal had widened and it's getting ready to open up. You're having those mega cargo ships that's coming in to this country. We're already dredging Charleston and a little further down to take those ships in. Imagine this. Those ships coming in with raw material. Those ships can come into plants and factories within our area with that raw material. Can you really just begin to fashion the impact for as jobs are concerned that would have on our area? It will just illuminize our area.
All right. Well, Leon, there's a bit of a fight going on between Savannah and here in Jasper, Beaufort County, because Savannah wants to widen and take those ships in. But we want to open the port in the Jasper area where it will require less dredging, less harm to the environment, and allow ships to come in safely. Also, bring an economic boom to an extremely impoverished area. And most of the infrastructure is already there. It's just a matter of now going home ahead and getting the approval for it. But Savannah keeps on fighting us. Now, you've got to compound that with a recent article that I read just this past week that they're having problems with labor in Panama. And the Panama Canal may not be opened in time because the contractors are not being paid. So this is going to be an interesting dynamic to look at.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. That's first that I've heard it. You just still kind of threw me for a loop for a second there. But what happened is that even – this is my thought. Something has to transpire. Something has to happen to get the bad Panama Canal open. They're not going to sit down, shut down, and say, well, we're not going to open it. They're going to go away. We're hoping and trusting that somewhere, some way, somehow, they will get open. Now, when you get down to Jasper County, once again, I get back to training our people, getting people in the position that when these industries or when these things come, we have to have our people ready to do these jobs, to do these labors. We just got to get people ready. And we need to start now.
Well, now that brings me into education, because one of the things Obama is supposed to be talking about on Tuesday night is education, higher education, ease of access to student aid and universal preschools. Now, as I went through each one of those reading it, I underlined education with an arrow to Common Core. Higher education, I did a little arrow to free college tuition and tuition loans, the DREAM Act, to universal preschools. Oh, great. Early indoctrination of our four-year-olds. Then he goes go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
No, go ahead. No, please, because it goes into another part.
Yeah, I was talking to my deputy campaign manager, who's a young attorney, and we were just conversing as we always do, and he said that he have a lot of friends that they did what was right when it pertains to education. They graduated high school, they went to college, they graduated college, they did well in school, now there's no jobs. Now they got this bill that they have to pay for school for their education, and now they don't have no job to pay for. These are some of the things that we need to start working on.
Well, that's going to go into a question that I have over here from the Rocky Mountain Tea Party, because you're talking about getting them into the positions for these jobs. But we also have now Obama with his immigration plan. We've got something, I think they estimated a total of 92 million Americans without work, whether they've left the workforce or whether they're simply unemployed or underemployed. But 92 million Americans, and he wants to bring in people to fill American jobs.
I was thinking about this. I want you to think about this. And there's this great controversy about the borders and people want to come into America and, you know, this is the land of the free and we want to do what is right as Christian people. But I'm going to be very blatant. If you don't think we need to control our borders and watch who come into this country, ask the American Indian. Think about it.
Very simple question. Very simple. Bigfoot is asking where Jasper County is in relation to Charleston. Jasper is approximately, I would say, an hour and a half south of Charleston, probably closer to 2 hours because you got to go through Beaufort. So, yes. But it's on
Jasper
the border
kind of
to Georgia.
On South Carolina, Georgia state line.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of people in Jasper County actually cross over into Georgia for jobs, and that's how bad the job market is here in that area. And it's a shame because you got people also going into Savannah, and they'll travel an hour and a half just for the job. And anywhere you go in Beaufort, you got to travel for the job. You know, bicycles doesn't work, guys. Not here.
No. You have to do a lot more. And as I was stating earlier, we have people that are doing things right. Then you have all these people that you just shared with me that's out of work. Yet we just sent a ton of money. I don't know the exact amount I knew of the other day. A ton of money to Syria. The government just sent a bunch of money to support Syria, supporting our enemies. Why can't we use this to better use more infrastructure in our communities in the United States of America? It's like a man taking care of everybody else's children but his own. This is what our government have come to. We're taking care of everybody else, and our people are suffering. You got homeless people here. You got people losing their home. You have people, you're talking about decent people that have worked all their lives, and all of a sudden the plant shut down or the plant went overseas, and now they are not working. And it's a catastrophic effect on their lifestyle. And yet our government, our leaders are taking care of everybody else but our own. And it needs to stop.
Yeah,
we have to stop it.
Absolutely. And you're seeing company after company after company cutting jobs, cutting from full-time to part-time, only because of Obamacare. Just that one is enough to cut the workforce by, again, millions of people. Then you add in the overregulation and taxation. How can a business even think of starting up in this time?
It's like it's an orchestrated plan to close every business down in the United States of America. And you ask the question, why are you doing it? You're taxing people out of a job. A lot of people are cutting back employment hours because they can't afford the insurance. You cut it back, I think it's 28 hours, then you don't have to pay the insurance. A lot of these companies are good people. They're good companies, but they cannot afford it. And you're forcing something on people that they can't afford. How do you expect them to survive? Then the company shut down, oh, well, so be it. But yet when the major auto industries were messing up, they got bailed out. And GM, if I'm not mistaken, they still filed bankruptcy. And this is what our government is doing, helping everybody, every entity but the people that need it.
And then when you see a business fail, you start hearing people, oh, they're too big to fail. Oh, yes, maybe they're too big to fail in your mind, but this is how capitalism works, because once they fail, someone else will step into that vacuum and do the business right. You know, two wrongs do not make a right. Simply because you bailed out GM does not mean you have to bail out the insurance industry. It was wrong to do TARP. It was wrong to do the stimulus. It was wrong to do the bailout. Do not compound these wrongs by doing another one. It's not an excuse.
It goes to that old saying, two wrongs don't make a right. If it's wrong, it is blatantly wrong. And I remember when I first heard about, when the first bailout first came, and this just means I'm going to be blatantly upfront and open. I thought, well, they're saving GM. Somebody would have stepped in and bought GM. Somebody would have done it. A company would have done it. There's too many big auto industry companies that would have bought them and would have gotten them back on track. And at the same time, when one company was getting back on track, another company was failing.
Yeah, and the worst part is that our government, all that stock they had of GM, that they said, oh, we're going to hold on to it, and we're going to make a profit on it, and the money will go back to the taxpayers. Wrong. That's not what they did, though, Leon. What they did was they sold the stock at a loss, at billions upon billions of dollars loss. They sold the stock when it was still low. They never made a profit on it. We, as the taxpayers, not only did we pay for that stock, we lost money on it.
One writer wrote many years ago, and I read this, in America, we are the most misinformed, uninformed, and most lied to people in the world.
All you have to do is look at the economy numbers and the unemployment rates that mainstream media is saying, oh, unemployment's dropping and the economy is coming back. Well, I'd like to know who that mathematician is in the government that's doing these numbers, because he is one imaginative person.
You can go on the media and say anything. Show me the people. Do you remember that Wendy's commercials that show me the beef? Where's the beef?
Where's the beef? Yep.
Where's the beef? Where's the beef? Show me the proof. Show me the job. Show me the people working. Because definitely not around the people that I associate with, the people that I talk to. And I shared with some Democrats the other night when I was speaking to a group. I said, poor people have been voting as Democrat for over 50 years. And I got this from someone else. And they're still poor. When are you going to change what you're doing? To change what we're the direction we're going, we're going to have to change the people that are in office. There's no other way. Well, they have the experience. They have the experience. They've been there X amount of years. They have the experience. Where has this experience taken us? Nowhere. It's destroying us.
Now, isn't Albert Einstein the one that said, you know, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting
a different result?
Yep.
Yeah, Albert Einstein.
Yep. Now, Mike, I'm sorry.
Mr. Nguyen, that's no problem, Andy. Mr. Nguyen, would you be in favor of eliminating all forms of financial aid in Department of Education and allowing states and local levels, cities themselves to really handle it and get the federal government completely out? Or would you remain tweak, or what would you do in that aspect?
We need to take the government. We need to take the government out of education completely, and to get back to the local states and the local communities. The government needs to come out. That's why I'm fighting Common Core. The government needs to come out. So I'm in favor of taking the government out and let the local state handle education in the state. Because if you think about it, each state has something that's indicative to that state. Each one of our states are unique. And whatever the challenges are or whatever the jobs are in our state, we need to work towards implementing programs that will help people that are living in the state as well as people that may be moving into the state. That's why each state ought to be unique with its education program. That's my belief.
Now, I just want to let people know that the call-in lines are open if they want to call in and ask Dr. Nguyen any questions. He's candidate for the 6th Congressional District here in South Carolina. And by the way, if you want to check out his website, there's a link on the show page, and I'm going to put another link up into the chat room. It is leonnguyen.com. One of the things that you were talking about was Common Core, and there was a woman up on Fox News, and she was explaining why she was, you know, a housewife, a mother, and suddenly she got into the fight against Common Core. She said one of the questions on the test was, if you have 18 students in a classroom and the school has a total of 90 students, how many classrooms are in that school? And most people in their head can turn around and say 5. You know, you do it really quick in your head. But she said you would have been marked a failing grade on that question. If you even put down the formula, you know, X times 18 equals 90 and show how you do it, you know, through algebra, you still would have the question wrong. Using Common Core methods, according to their standards, you have to do 108 steps with circles and arrows and smiley faces and all this other BS on it, 108 steps to show how you get to the answer of 5. Now, can you imagine a business owner going to hire someone for their business? And here you've got a person that can do the mathematics in their head, 1, 2, 3, snap. Now, I would, by Common Core standards, be a failure. With the Common Core, you've got a person sitting there for half an hour drawing all these smile faces, circles, arrows, and everything else on this piece of paper. And half an hour later, they come to an answer I derived within a matter of a split second.
I'm even better than that. I have an experience that is that I saw. I was in a sixth grade class the other week with my youngest daughter, and the teacher was there, and I got a good rapport with them. And I so noticed the Common Core book on the desk, and the young lady came up, and she had the answer. And the teacher said, "All right, you have the answer. The answer correct. How did you get it?" And she didn't do all the steps, and she said, "You got to go back and do all the steps." And the child was standing there, but I got the answer. No, you have to go back and do the steps. And I asked the teacher, I said, "How do you feel about this Common Core?" She said, "Mr. Nguyen, it's causing me to pull my hair out."
The teachers
don't like it.
One
teacher told me in the Sumter County area that the parents ought to be able to go and sue the county, the school district, for what they were teaching in Common Core last year. They threw in Common Core. to the teachers with no training and say, teach this. Children did not learn last year because the teachers didn't know what to do. How can you can't teach what you don't know. And that's exactly what happened. They just thrust it upon them, and they were stuck. And teachers, you know, everybody, you know, they don't want to jeopardize their job. They don't want to come out boldly and speak against Common Core. But somebody got to stand up and say, it is not working. Every child does not learn on the same level. It is theoretically, humanly impossible. I was looking at this commercial several years ago, and this man said, I have two twin sons. I love them both. One loved math, the other loved recess.
Oh, yeah. I know a lot of people like that. You know, everyone has one of them in their family.
People, we just learn differently. We just learn differently. And you can't have one stand. It's like one size fit all. In one size fit all, it has, think about it, no matter what it is, if it's a hat, if it's a jacket, one size cannot fit all. It does not, it's impossible.
Yeah, we had someone asking in the chat room if Common Core is USA-wide or a state issue. It is a federal standard.
It's federal implemented. Mm-hmm.
Right. And what the federal government does is they go up to the states and they say, oh, listen, we'll give you this federal money, and all this great money comes pouring into the state school budgets. And they go, oh, wow. And all we have to do is implement this Common Core standard. And on paper, you know, when they sell it to you, it sounds really nice. But then when mm-hmm. you start to look into it, you look at the horror that is this thing called Common Core. And as you said, our students are not learning. We are now, every single year they have Common Core implemented, is at least another 5 to 10 years, our students are falling behind the rest of the world. And this Common Core is going to kill a whole generation of students coming up.
I asked my congregation, well, I have some young girls, some young ladies and men, that at the church, every grading period, whoever made straight A's, we take up offering in church for them. A young lady that have always made straight A's, have never missed it. She's in the 11th grade now, did not make straight A's last grading period. And I called a friend, like, what happened? She said, I don't know. And that's when I asked the congregation, do you know what Common Core is? Not one person knew what it was. Yet your children are being taught. This is probably why, one of the reasons, this young lady who always made straight A's did not make straight A's, because it's a different teaching method. And we're planning on doing a workshop with some people out of the Charleston area that's bringing them to the church to talk to people about Common Core into the community, that we're sitting down as a people not doing nothing and thinking that everything is all right because the government is implementing it. And it hints the concept I used earlier, the love of money is the root of all evil. That's biblically referenced. All you have to do is put something with a big money price tag. You take this, and you implement this, and we'll give you this. Only thing in life come free is trouble. As they're giving it to you, what are they taking away?
Our intellect, our youth,
exactly.
Our most valuable asset. And what people don't realize is, all right, they're thinking, all right, I'm homeschooling my kid, or I'm sending them to private school, I'm sending them to the religious school, and I'm going to escape Common Core. Fine, but here's the kicker. All of the universities and colleges, all of your higher learning schools are using Common Core standards for the admittance. So if you cannot think Common Core and the crap they're shoveling these kids, then they cannot get into those institutions. And the few institutions that will not use Common Core standards for admissions are going to be very, very few and far between, and they will have a line out the door trying to get people in, and it's going to be a huge nightmare.
That's why we need to fight it now. It has taken root, but it can be uprooted, and we need to fight it right now. We need to fight it with everything we have, and people,
absolutely.
And we need to speak out on it more. Information.
Well, Mr. Wynn, what about the fact that as a black conservative, I mean, I don't mean to play armchair quarterback here, but you're really not talking the kind of message that people, that the good doers like Jesse Jackson and Sharpton and all those wonderful black people who have really helped the poor and the less fortunate. You kind of sound like what they refer to as Uncle Tom's and all those other things. How do you respond to that?
First, Forrest, I want you to write me a letter and verbatim list for me the good that those two have done.
I need
to see it in writing. And once I see it in writing, then I'm going to research it and find out. And then I'm going to come back to you and say, no, they didn't. No, they did not. The thing that, and building on what you're saying, I'm also humorous as well. Building on what you're saying, they sell a bag of goods, but the goods that they sell only contribute to their benefit. One of the things that I say as a pastor, and I do this all the time, and I use the concept, I drop the plumb line. I said to my congregation, how often do I make a mistake? And I do make mistakes now, but when it pertains to this church, here's how I don't make a mistake, and I want everyone to understand it. If an individual is doing something that they don't profit or benefit from it, but everyone else profit and benefit for and is for the betterment of everyone else, how can that person be wrong? But when you're benefiting from it, then something's wrong with that picture.
Yeah,
and people are benefiting on the things that are going wrong in our society.
Well,
and they're selling a bag of goods.
That they are. And no one remembers the book that Jesse Jackson wrote with his sons about how he used becoming a minister and having a church, how he was able to profit from it. And no one talking about that. You know, that seemed to have gotten swept under the rug along with his presidential run.
A lot of things get swept under the rug because people don't like hearing the truth. It's like when I talk about the Republican Party, what the Republican Party does for the black, have done for the black community. A lot of people, they just don't want to hear it. They just don't want to hear it. You would rather hear a lie. You would rather hear myth and make-believe than to hear the facts. These are the facts. I didn't make them. I didn't write them, but they are here. Understand them. Now, once you know better, you ought to do better. And that's the challenge, is to get people to say, okay, I'm just not going to accept this way anymore. I'm going to do better.
Now, I'm going to ask you, because you were up there with us at the South Carolina Tea Party Convention, and I was on Andrea Shays King's show when I got back Monday night, and I felt it. I felt that there was a turning tide. I felt an energy. I felt an excitement. I felt more positive messages than ever before, and this is the fourth convention I've been at, and they've only had four. But I also found that when I came back into the community, I'm feeling the same thing. People are not buying or drinking the Kool-Aid anymore. They're starting to wake up. Like you had
well,
that meeting
not.
With the, what was it? That it was in Chicago with the Reverend Al Sharpton, where his own community turned on him.
Yeah. No, I didn't see that. I need to look at that up. People are not buying the Kool-Aid anymore because they realize it's not Kool-Aid but muddy water. And don't hand me muddy water anymore and tell me it's Kool-Aid. I have enough sense to know it's Kool-Aid. And people's minds are opening up. I was spoken last night with one of the social law, I shared with the group on last night, there is a movement. Once we left there, we stopped by the Huddle House to eat, and there was this black minister there, his wife, and a couple of other people there. And we just started conversing. I told them who I was and what I was all about and what I was doing. And they said, we wish you the best. And I said, I don't want you to wish me the best. Do you live in Orangeburg County? And they said, yes, I need your support and your vote. And they said to me, you can count on it. And they are my age group. They're in the mid to late 50s, early 60s. That's telling me there's a paradigm shift going on in society where people are saying nothing positive is happening. We need to change the way we've been doing things, and we have to take that with full strive and keep this momentum going.
Now, I agree. Now, did you feel the same energy I did? Because, you know, there was a lot of people that when I was walking around, I was telling them, have you met Dr. Wynn? Do you know he's running against Clyburn? And I was sending people over, and I was saying, make sure you tell him I sent you over there. But, you know,
we got a lot of that. This one lady, I have to tell you all this. This one lady came up to me. She came and hugged me, and she said, you're black. I said, really? I didn't know that. I said, oh, my God. Please, I thank them for telling me.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah,
well, I think your point is very well taken, is that these car salesmen, when they get the used car salesmen, I should say, they got a clunker in front of you, and they want to tell you why you should pay a high price and what a good deal it is when you can clearly see it's not. But with
right.
their words and illusions like a magician, all of a sudden they're like, hey, although that car's missing a motor, it's got potential. I mean, and that's exactly the kind of bull crap that they feed you. And
yeah, they sell you an idealism. They don't sell you an idea. They sell you a myth. And if you buy it, then you're stuck. And we need to stop being stuck with the myth. And one of the things I share with people can teach hate. You can separate people by hate. We have been separated by color, black and white, for centuries. It's time to stop. We need to be united on principles, what we believe in as Christians and what we believe in as people, where it pertains to our family, our children, and this nation. We need to come together as one, working together for the betterment of all people.
Yeah, it's funny because now I'm pulling out a bunch of articles that, you know, I'm always researching all the way up to just a few minutes before going on the air, and I know Cool Mike was listening to me stapling papers together as I was doing my last-minute notes. But here, your opponent, James Clyburn, just this past Tuesday, made a statement that Americans must decide whether to fight against attempts to undermine the civil rights progress that Martin Luther King Jr. helped achieve. But I don't think he truly
really
understands what those civil rights achievements were.
That's interesting. Because entitlement undermined what King taught. Handouts undermine what King taught. Taking people's dignity away undermine what King taught. So I have no idea where what he's thinking about. And I can't explain where his mind is at.
Well, one of my favorite, as a former New Yorker, people, and one of the reasons why I left the state of New York, actually it was a matter of days before Hillary was sworn in the first time as senator, he wants to drive a wedge. He wants to poison. This is his word. He wants to poison the Tea Party by driving a wedge between its rich founders and its blue-collar rank and file. And he specifically reached out to and names the Koch brothers. But I'm reading this, and as I'm reading the tripe that he's saying, how he wants to make it the super wealthy against, you know, the grassroots, he obviously doesn't understand conservative principles or what the Tea Party is honestly about.
Let me share something with you, because I totally understand what you're saying, and I totally understand the psychology of others. Prior to being introduced to the Tea Party, my feelings, my sentiments were the same. I thought the Tea Party was a bunch of people that was trying to not exactly undermine the government, but I was just not Tea Party at all until I started meeting people, until I started talking to people. And when I went to this convention on last weekend, it really illuminated my way of thinking. And I'm being frank with you. It really changed the way I thought about the Tea Party. And here's the challenge is that, have you ever been to my house?
Honestly, no. You have not been to mine either.
I don't know what's in yours. You don't know what's in mine. Until I introduce you to my house, you come in and see how I live and see what I'm all about. Then people can say whatever they want to say. And people can clog your vision of where I live. People can cloud my vision of where you live or how you live, because I don't know and I don't take the time to find out. I'm going to expose people. Take the time to find out. Just don't listen to what other people say. Find out for yourself. We've been sold a bag of goods for so long because we just based it on what somebody we think that is looking out for, and really, to be frank about it, they're looking out for themselves. Learn these people for yourself and see what it's about, and you would get a better understanding on who these people are. And once you get a better understanding of who these people are, you will find out you will be joining them because their fight is the same as yours.
Absolutely, and I love telling the story. I got a friend of mine. He proudly says he's a liberal. He happens to be an attorney, though strange, and we share the bar stool next to each other, and he was watching something on TV. It happened to be Fox News, and he and I had gotten into some, you know, healthy debates. We always walk away as friends. You know, I said it's always good to have an exchange of ideas. He was very, very pro-Obamacare. And one day he's screaming at the TV. And I looked up, and I forget what it was, but it was something, an issue that I had been championing. And he's screaming at the TV. He goes, I can't believe the media is saying what they're saying. They don't understand it. And as he's ranting and raving, I just looked at him, smiled, one of my sweetest. And I'm learning to be a Southern lady here. I'm learning how you can go, bless your heart, and let them walk away 5 minutes later and know that you just
insulted. You got to learn how to say darling.
Yes. So that's exactly what I did. And I said, Ken, darling, bless your heart. But you know what? Now you're seeing my side of the argument. We're really not that far apart. And here he is, South Carolina, Beaufort, born and bound, and he just looked at me for a second, and he started laughing. He goes, you know what? You're right. You're right. We do agree on more things than we disagree on. And that's what we have to get across. I mean, when Schumer comes out and says that he wants to drive a wedge between what he calls wealthy donors, I mean, my group has zero donors, so I don't know where these wealthy donors are coming from, or the blue collar. He doesn't even know. We've got a lot of rednecks and blue collars. We've got a lot of executives. We've got, you know, people that are millionaires and people that are paupers. I mean, sometimes I don't have two nickels to rub together. So I don't know what he's talking about. But he fails to understand the principles of the Republican
Party. That you have a
common
bond.
Yeah. And I have no problem with someone keeping the wealth that they honestly worked for.
Exactly.
So if someone is wealthy and he's willing to lend me a hand in an issue I feel passionate about, come aboard, baby. So with Schumer trying to do this, he's not going to drive a wedge. He's only going to help to unite us. So I say, Chuckie Schumer, go for it. Go for it, because I'm going to applaud your effort. I'm going to sit back and I'm going to watch you fail miserably. And I probably, forgive me, Lord, I will be laughing all the way.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Mr. Wynn, what is, as we see, I want to go federal talking to the president now. As we have seen over the last 4 to 5 years under the leadership of President Obama, he's addressing a true concern within our country, of course, gun control. And the best thing, of course, as we all know, is to remove guns from people like you and I and Annie, because government will protect us. Regarding the Second Amendment, what is your stand? And specifically, what does the Second Amendment mean to Congressman Leon Wynn?
Second Amendment means to me, it's just not, guns are just not for me to protect myself and my family. It's for us to even protect ourselves from the government. If we have to call upon a militia to protect ourselves from government trying to overthrow the freedom of the country, that's what it means to me. Do you recall, well, not you can't recall because this is before some of us was born, but Hitler, first thing Hitler did was take the gun from the Jews, took all their weapons. Now, when it's time, when he came up with the idea to start destroying the Jews, they had nothing to fight with. The Second Amendment gives us the right to protect ourselves as well as from foreign and domestic intrusion. That's my outlook on it.
Well, I just posted, my husband posted up in the chat room a link to a newspaper, actually a Fox News article. There's another newspaper. It's called Civitas something or other. And one of the major news outlets here in the United States, and they want to put up, they're collecting a database of every single CPW permit holder in the United States. And then I'm willing to bet they're not going to stop at that. They'll just look for every single legal gun owner in the United States. And they're claiming that they're not going to post that database. The initials
really?
BS come to mind.
I understand the wording.
Yeah, and understand this, is that the United States, its Declaration of Independence and its Constitution were formed on victories over what? Its own government.
That's correct.
I mean,
and let me throw this at you and think about this. I was thinking about this morning, not even to be on the radio show, but I woke up thinking about this. We are streamlining our military. We're cutting back on the military. We're cutting back on the military, yet we are sending aid to our enemies. Do anybody besides me see a problem with that picture?
Oh, man. Living in the heart of the Tri-Command here, I opened up the newspaper today to see that our naval hospital here, and you got to understand, this is a huge military active and retired community here between Parris Island Recruit Depot, between the Naval Hospital, between the Marine Corps Air Station, and other outlying bases. This Naval Hospital is extremely busy, and they're going to close down the emergency. They're going to close down the OBGYN. They're going to close down other sections of it also, and they're only going to keep open a clinic, an outpatient clinic, and they're shoveling everyone else over to our local main hospital, Beaufort Memorial. This hospital can't handle that influx of patients. We need the two hospitals to work in concert together. But because of this budget cut, the $50 million or $500 million or whatever it was the military was told to cut, that where do they cut? They don't cut these fluff programs. No, they cut it where it's going to hurt the men and women, active and retired, disabled and elderly. They're going to hurt the very men and women we asked to help protect this nation, that we pledged to honor and to give them these benefits, and they're being ripped out behind from underneath them. First they do it with their pensions, and now they're doing it with the services. It is reprehensible.
And we need to stop it. This will be one of the most, and this is my feeling, one of the most non-presidential elections ever. We have a chance to change all of the stuff that we're fighting by putting some different people in the Congress as well as into the Senate. We have to rally people, support people, have to get up, get out, support, grassroots, talk to people, get people sensitized on trying to realize what is going on, get the information out. We have to work extremely hard to make a difference. This is a vital time in our history, and we have to get out there and make a difference. Everybody has to get out there and make a difference. We can. I think you said earlier that you talk to people, what are you doing about it? What are you doing about it? What are you doing? What are you doing? And we got to let that message resonate throughout the South, or throughout the nation, to be realistic.
And amen to that. I do say that. And that's going to be, when I talk to the crowd on our meeting on Monday and again on Tuesday, that's my question. What are you going to do? These things are happening around us, and who is going to step up into the fight? You know, I'm doing what I can by contacting my congressmen and my senators and speaking out to media outlets, by holding these meetings, by bringing together that meet and greet and question and answer session on Tuesday, by bringing in outside media saying, listen, we're here, we're active, we want you to get the word out so other people can join the fight. I know what I'm doing, and even using this show as a bully pulpit. So I'm going to ask the people out there, what are they doing? It's easy to sit there in front of their computers or on their cell phones or whatever they're using to listen to the show or to listen to other shows. But once you get this information, what are you going to do with it? How are you going to act? Will you pick up that phone? Will you write that email? Will you write that letter to the editor? Will you talk to your friends and neighbors and spread the word?
That's what we need to do.
Okay. I have a couple rapid-fire questions I have for Mr. Leon Nguyen. Just simple yes or no answers, and the questions come quickly. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
All righty. Patriot Act, repeal or keep?
Repeal.
Department of Homeland Security, eliminate or expand?
Eliminate.
Social Security for future generations, 40 years and younger, remained as such or change?
Change.
Or eliminate?
Okay. Eliminate.
All right. All right. My next question, rapid fire question. Where was this? Okay. Several states are currently have coming up this August and September elections, legalization of marijuana. This stems from Colorado's passing of the legalization in November of 2013. As congressman, would you support a national bill that would legalize marijuana for the entire 50 states
Unsure.
Yes or
I can't.
No?
I have to take the gray area on that. I'm unsure.
Okay. Now, here's another one. Legalization of cocaine, heroin, and other narcotics,
no.
As Ron Paul suggested in his last presidential debate.
No.
Okay. Do you feel that drug testing by employers is a violation of rights? Yes or no?
No.
And would you favor a bill that would take the U.S. Senate and senators back to the states to where they are appointed by the individual House of Representatives and state senators in their individual states rather than being voted on by the public? Yes or no?
No, public.
Okay. Annie?
Well, we're right down to
you know what? Let me ask you a question. Let me
well,
ask
we're down
you
to our 4 minutes here, Mike.
Okay, well, hang on a second. Mr. Wynn, what is your favorite band? What is something about you that's non-political, like music or just a little bit about Leon Wynn other than politics?
Other than the church preaching, I love being around my family. I love to hunt. I'm a hunter. I love to hunt. That's my pastime. Get me up in a tree, and it's cold like it is right now, the wind not blowing so hard, I'm totally relaxed. Helping people.
All righty.
And helping people. 25 hours a day, 7 days a week. It doesn't matter how tired I am. I get such a gratification when I get an opportunity to help somebody, some way, somehow. If it's an old lady side of the road changing a tire, I don't know. That's one of the things I just love. I just love helping people.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Annie?
Well, I got to say, you know, for some reason, for the last week or so, I've had this one song that's been going through my head, and would you believe it? It's not a popular tune. It's not one of my favorite artists, but it happens to be, I think, now one of my favorite songs, How Great Thou Art. For some reason, I cannot get that song out of my head. Well, Reverend Wynn, I want to thank you for joining us, and I know we're going to have you back several more times before the election is going to come, so just be prepared. I'm going to keep on calling on you, and I'll talk to your campaign manager a little bit later on.
I'm honored that y'all would have me. God bless everybody.
Thank you so very much.
All righty.
Dr. Wynn, his website, please go to it, leonwynn.com. Mike, we're down to our last few, and I just want to let people know what we got coming up. We have Michael Johns, who's one of the founders of the Tea Party movement. He'll be on with us on Tuesday, and then we're going to bring back columnist and activist Jason Matera, and we've got Trevor Loudon coming back, our most favorite New Zealander, and then from the Frederick Douglass Republicans, K. Carl Smith. So we got ourselves a great lineup for future shows. I want to welcome everyone back to come on, see us on Tuesday, same bat time, same bat station. So, Mike, you have any last words? We got just seconds on the clock.
Nope. Have a good weekend, everybody. Good night, Ann.
Well, have a safe one. Good night, and God bless you all.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time, yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American.